Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salieri Report. I am so pleased to be talking today about Vax 3, an amazing, exciting new documentary. And we are joined by Polly Tommy, the leader of CHD TV. You see us every week almost on Financial Rebellion with Polly. And of course, Polly, we came to fall in love with from Vax 1 and Vax 2, which was a life-changing experience for me. And then the unbelievable Dr. Brian Hooker, who's the chief scientist from CHD, from Children's Health Defense. And Brian, I want you to know, whenever, if you want to get me upset, all you have to do is say, why is nobody doing anything? but one of the first thing that happens when somebody makes the mistake of saying that in front of me is they hear a group of names pulled out to describe what is, you know, what one person, the extraordinary amount that one person can do. And you are always one of the first examples.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Wow.
So,
I gotta be on your show.
Well, but here you're two people who had a dreadful experience with vaccine injury, and now you have converted it into something which is protecting and saving millions of lives. So I can't thank you enough. I told Polly, we were at the Wesson Price Conference, and Sasha Latipovi and I were coming up with our heroes. And I said, you know, my heroes are all the vaccine injured kids, parents who warned everyone so that when COVID came, we knew how dangerous the injections were. And of course, Vax 1 and Vax 2 were huge reasons that helped me tremendously. So we're here to talk about your new documentary, Vax 3. It launches in September, and we're going to hear all about it. But before we begin, Polly, why don't you start us on the history? Because this all happened when you were censored in a film festival in New York, and you started to meet with people in the theaters where you could get a showing. And then I think it was you said, well, let's get a bus.
Well, I think we should go back a bit further than that, if that's okay.
Okay. You take us where you want to start.
Well, I think we should throw it over to Brian, because if it wasn't for Brian Hooker, we would have no Vax 1, 2, 3, and even be sitting here right now.
So that is true.
Why don't you tell us, Brian, about how the whole thing came about and what Vax 1 was about?
Well, Vax 1 was about a whistleblower from the Centers for Disease Control. His name is Dr. William Thompson. And Dr. Thompson reached out to me in November of 2013. And, you know, we had crossed paths before, a long time before, but he, you know, prior to this point was sort of this brusque CDC scientist who just kind of blew me off and blew up my concerns and the concerns regarding my son's vaccine injury. But when he called in 2013, he called from his private number, which was really quite astounding to me just to begin with. But we connected, and he started confessing that the CDC had covered up the link between the MMR vaccine and autism incidents, as well as the Marisol-containing vaccines, the Marisol, the mercury-containing preservative that was used in many vaccines back when my son Steve and Polly's son Billy got vaccinated, is still in the flu shot. But Dr. Thompson confessed this fraud, and he showed me how specifically with the MMR vaccine, that if African-American boys got it on time, they were three times as likely as those that just merely waited until they were after 3 years of age to get an autism diagnosis. And it was so highly statistically significant that it jumped off the page. And his remorse, his story, the documents that we shared over the sort of 10-month time period before the whistleblower story became public in August of 2014, all of that then was documented, first of all, by Andy Wakefield, and then became the movie Vaxxed.
Vaxxed, that's the first Vaxxed.
That's the first Vaxxed, right.
First
and that sort of kicked everything off. And of course, you know, if Vaxxed 1 went viral, It's an amazing movie. I had such a wonderful time working with Polly and Dell and Andy. You know, they captured some of my own son's story and so forth. But the thing that really catapulted it was that it was banned from the Tribeca Film Festival by none other than Robert De Niro.
Controversy tonight over Robert De Niro's decision to pull a documentary from the Tribeca Film Festival. The documentary, titled Vaxxed, was slated to screen at the festival. The film was co-directed and written by Andrew Wakefield, who was stripped of his medical license after his studies linking autism to childhood vaccines were discredited. De Niro pulled it from the list, saying after reviewing the film, he does not believe it contributes to or furthers the discussion he had hoped for. But the movie's producer says this is not anti-vaccination film and it's filled with credible information that people should hear.
Who is stopping that story? Is it a corporate interest? I don't know. Why does Tribeca suddenly not want to tell this story? Why does, you know, I have nothing but respect for Robert De Niro and Tribeca. I can't imagine what type of pressure came down that would make them pull a movie that they were obviously behind in the beginning.
Right. So tell us that story, Polly, because it was, I remembered and I followed it in great detail and it was fascinating and it really put the documentary on the map.
Well, so my part in the documentary, we told Billy's story. I was never meant to be in the documentary. I was supposed to be a marker for someone better to be in the documentary, but they ended up keeping Billy in the documentary because the story they said was bang on exactly what it should be for the thing. So I ended up touring with Andy and Dell. But before that happened, we were so excited. And then I got a call. I remember it vividly. It was on a Sunday morning. So I was about to go to church. And I got this call from Dell saying, they've taken us out. We have no platform now for Vax. It's over. And I remember thinking, this cannot be. All of this work, everything that we've done. For that moment, I just didn't understand like my faith or everything. I was just like, none of it makes sense. So I headed off to church, did my prayers, came back and got another phone call from Dell saying, oh my goodness, look at the internet. It is blowing up with hashtag Vaxxed. And hashtag Vaxxed became huge. So they realized the dark side, as I call them then. They'd made a massive mistake by putting De Niro on the television and him saying, listen, guys, you need to see this film. Because he, of course, right, has an injured child himself. And so from then on, it backfired on the other side so badly. We were getting so much traction with this film.
So let me just stop you, because I don't think many people understand. You were going to be shown at the Tribeca Film Festival, which is run by a group of people, including De Niro. And then it got pulled. And De Niro, was pretty stand up. He went on TV and explained, you know, why it was pulled, but also, you know, said everybody should see it. And of course, then everybody, you know, the combination of De Niro saying you should see it and it getting pulled meant everybody really had to see it.
And at that time, we didn't have the censorship on Facebook or Instagram and all those social media platforms. We had huge followings on there doing vaccine injury stories and stuff like that. So we were able to get out there and everyone was chatting about it. So we started traveling and we were flying around to airports, Andy, Dell and myself. And we were getting stuck in airports and just we were not getting the stories and getting to the places we need to. So I said to Dell, we've got to get a bus. We've got to be on the ground with the people, not flying around spending hours. And so we did. We got a bus, a tiny bus compared to the Children's Health Defense bus. It was given to us by Sheila Ely, Dr. Sheila Ely, who we sadly lost recently. It was their family
who
bus.
Who was an amazing part of Vax2, right?
Vax1, she was.
Of the original Vax,
amazing, amazing part. Amazing, amazing doctor, amazing woman, amazing mother. She had a vaccine-injured child.
Absolutely. Right. And amazing advocate, everything. So Sheila gave us her family bus. And we wrapped it up and headed out with the best of the best that we could find at the time to see what was out there on the road. And I know that most people who have seen Vax2, it was incredible what we learned. I honestly went out there, Catherine, thinking the MMR is really bad because that hurt my son. And I heard a little bit about a few babies dying, but I had no idea. I didn't even know what Gardasil even was until we got out on the road. That's how naive I was. And I thought I was pretty much a sort of expert in MMR and autism. But the minute we hit the road and we got our first Gardasil story, and then the dead babies kept coming in their droves, this was the best education that I've ever had in my entire life. And we were so fortunate to have Periscope at that time. So everybody was live with us. We were live all the time on the bus. And we had such a great following of people. It really lifted the spirits of those who had injured children that, first of all, you're not on your own. There's so,
so
many.
It's really funny when you would run these great, and they're some of the best interviews I've ever seen. I keep thinking of the McDowell triplets. I love that interview. It's only 18 minutes long. But as you know, everybody's chatting along with you, and they, when they want to express empathy, they send the little hearts, and you would show the guests the little hearts, and you really felt like you were a community. It was a remarkable feeling.
We were the top Periscope group on Periscope. We had more hearts than anybody else. But the minute we made Vax 2 and we said thank God for Periscope, Periscope was bought and taken down. That is not a coincidence. So we lost Periscope. Right. So you know, it is what it is. But Vax 2 was, I mean, people talk about Colton Barrett. Everybody remembers this Colton's story and Carrie Bundy with her son that died. I mean, it was horrific, but it was a massive education. And it ended on the health of the unvaccinated. And that was important.
So what happened to you? You didn't expect this, but people started bringing unvaccinated children and telling the story. And that was a whole new unexpected development for you. So explain exactly what happened.
Well, if I'm to be really honest, and this sounds really bad, everywhere we stopped, there would be loads of families with these unvaccinated children. And I was just like, what are you doing here? We are going around recording stories of vaccinating. That sounds awful, but I just didn't understand for about 6 months why these people were here other than to watch, show us your child is healthy. Great, we're doing people who are injured. It was that kind of attitude. It was so weird. And then bam, I came home for a break and I was talking to Brian Burrows on the phone, who's the director of Vax 2 and now Vax 3, who has an unvaccinated son. And I was like, he's telling me how his son was top of the class. It was embarrassing because every single week he was top of the class, all that kind of stuff. I thought, oh my gosh, we've got to hear the unvaccinated stories because that's the bit that we don't know. Why have they not died of measles? Why are they there? I suddenly realized that's why they're at the every stop. And so started inviting them in, which was really good for our mental health to be able to do those stories as well. And that's when it all pieced together. But for the first 6 months, I didn't understand it at all.
Also found all these families who had started vaccinating and then ended up, you know, so they had older children who were vaccine injured, but then younger children who were unvaxxed. And you could see the differences within the same family.
Right. And that's when I called Brian Hooker and I was like, listen, you're a scientist. There's something really extraordinary about what we're finding, which sounds silly now because everybody knows this. But what we were finding is these two families, same genetics, same parents, same environment, same everything, have their first child injured or even dead. Second child, they decide to space the vaccinations out because they thought maybe they just give too many at one time. Disastrous on that as well. And then they would go on and have more children with nothing. They would almost give birth in the woods, if you like, at home, no intervention. So tell us your name.
My name is Kendra. This is my youngest son, Jordan. He's 17 and completely unvaccinated. I also have a 19-year-old son at home that is completely unvaccinated.
Right, how old did she say you were?
17.
Nothing at all. No vitamin K, nothing.
Nothing at all. He was born at home, so there isn't even any risk of anybody slipping anything.
So why?
Okay, no.
How come you decided not to vaccinate your kids?
Well, my mom didn't vaccinate my brother. He's about 12 years younger than me, and my dad was very pro-vax. And so when I got pregnant with my oldest, I knew that I had to research both sides. By that point, I had worked in a DO's office temporarily, and I saw the drug reps coming in all the time, and as the doctors doctor of osteopath, MD, yeah. And we had drug reps in there all the time, you know, pushing the newest and latest drugs and that type of a thing. They'd bring in food, and all the doctors are scarfing down food. And so I just started feeling that the MD side was always pushing pharma. So when I started researching vaccines, I knew one of my parents was going to be upset, you know, either my mom if I vaccinated, my dad if I didn't, and I knew I needed to make a decision that was best for me. So the risks of the vaccines ended up scaring me more than the risks of the diseases themselves. And I think part of it when I started was just that the vaccine was a for sure risk, you know, you were giving it to them and then you were risking all the side effects where the diseases themselves were, you know, you may or may not catch it. And so that in and of itself made it a little bit safer. obviously, as I've researched more, then I know that I made the right decision.
When you have kids, are you going to vaccinate them?
No.
You know you got to pick your wife very, very carefully. I mean it. I mean, I'm not joking.
We have sons, so this is a
hot topic. It is a serious subject because love is love.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to make sure you're on the same page with vaccines because we are seeing the most dreadful stories with people that fall out or whatever, and then courts will rule in the favor of the one that wants to vaccinate. And the difference between the unvaccinated kids and the vaccinated was incredible. But Brian, you was already on that
with
studies.
We had the good fortune of working with several different practitioners that were friendly to non-vaccinating families, and we developed a database of medical records of vaccinated versus unvaccinated children. And from this, I published my first paper with Neil Miller in 2020, showing the difference between the health of the vaccinated, those that were following the CDC's vaccination schedule, versus those individuals that were unvaccinated. And Catherine, it was just astounding. The difference, twice as many developmental delays. And in the first study, we were a little cautious. We only looked at vaccines during the first year of life. But if they got one or more vaccine during the first year of life, their risk of a developmental delay doubled. If their risk of asthma went up by about 450%. Their risk of gastrointestinal disorders and ear infections also doubled. And we continued to publish this. And I started to seek out more and more studies, really at the bequest of Bobby Kennedy, who contacted me in 2019 and said, let's start to feature these vax versus unvax studies on my Instagram and Facebook accounts. And we started and we continued to do this. I thought I'd find a few, but I found over 100 studies.
So, but I just want to stop you because one of the things that's very shocking when you get into looking at the history of vaccines is that all the regulatory agencies who are responsible to oversee these programs don't automatically do vax versus unvaxxed. In other words, it's been hard to dig up a lot of vax versus unvax because I would say the pharmaceutical industry and the regulators have avoided doing so. Is that fair to say?
I think that they flat out refuse to do so. In fact, that was the case when Mr. Kennedy went and met with Anthony Fauci and Francis Collins at the National Institutes of Health. They flat out said, vaccines are safe and effective. We don't have to do that study. And so independent scientists have had to fill in the gaps. And I was unaware of how many of these studies we would find. But it turned out that we had so many studies that were featured that Bobby Kennedy and I then published a book in 2023 called Vax, Let the Science Speak. And primarily, these are independent scientists. They are studies that are published and indexed to the National Library of Medicine. So they're on PubMed, the vast majority of them that we featured in the book. And then there's some accidental studies where the CDC or another federal agency like the National Institutes of Health would let something slip. And usually it was like on page 6 of the paper buried in some type of supplemental figure. But lo and behold, we found evidences there also that the unvaccinated were just so much healthier.
Right. And I have to say, I want to strongly recommend your book, Vax versus Unvaxxed. And when it was introduced to me, it was explained, if you just look at all the charts, it'll take you 15 minutes to read the book by reading the charts, and you'll get the whole story. So even if you're busy, you need to get this book because it can really show you the remarkable difference and do it pretty quickly. So go ahead, Polly.
The work that went into that book as well. Brian worked really hard on that. But I have a couple of things I want to say on what we just talked about. Brian, did they not say another reason why they're not doing the vax-unvax studies properly is because it's totally unfair and unethical to do that on the unvaccinated? They would be put at great risk if they didn't have
absolutely. Vaccine. Absolutely. So. That was sort of their excuse and has been excuse from the sort of pro-vaccine apologist talking heads like Dr. Paul Offit that, oh, well, it'd be unethical. And they talk about them dying from all of these, horrific infectious diseases. And nobody's dying. In fact, it's the polar opposite. Even when you look at infectious diseases like respiratory illnesses and ear infections, the unvaccinated do better.
Right. You know, one of the things that we discovered on the bus as well, so we were getting some unvaccinated families coming in to talk to us, and some of them had things that were not quite right with them, not autism, but just not quite right, and couldn't put our finger on it. So we would go back to the story and say, right, let's talk about when you were pregnant, or did you have any vaccines? Anyway, it turned out that some of these kids that were unvaccinated had something called vitamin K or vitamin K, depending on from where you're from, at birth. So I called Brian. I was like, do your studies account for the vitamin K? No, they didn't, did they? Because that was a hospital, something that was done at the hospital. And then we looked into the vitamin K, and it's toxic as anything. It is like having it's not a vaccine, but you might as well. It's got all the horrible components in it of a vaccine.
And it's got a black box warning. It's got an FDA black box warning on it, but they give it to all newborns just as a standard of care.
I remember thanking my midwife for giving, what a nice gesture to give my baby some vitamin K, because you think to yourself, that must be something beautifully and naturally. But no, it's synthetic, it's disgusting, it's dangerous. And so we started this big campaign on the vitamin K. And it was interesting, Catherine, because I couldn't find a doctor to proper speak out about the vitamin K or vitamin K. And one doctor is very well known to us said, look, I don't want to talk about that, because if I go out saying don't get it, which I don't think anybody should get it, and something happens, because sometimes things happen, then I don't want to be responsible for that. And the more people we asked, the more people were just like not touching it. Found it fascinating. And in fact, it's reminded me it's something we need to go back to, because the babies who didn't have the vitamin K are a lot healthier than the ones that did.
Right. I'm always finding myself warning people about the vitamin K, and they literally don't know about it. Even if they know about vaccines, they don't know. Okay, so Vax 2 comes out, and Vax 1 was pretty amazing. Vax 2 was really amazing. But then you felt the need to go back out on a bus. So tell us what happened. How did the next bus come into being?
Well, so we go through the whole what we call the COVID era. And we're watching television, and people, my job, by the way, before anybody says, why are you watching mainstream TV? I don't, but I have to keep my eye on it, because that's part of my job, is to debunk it, if you like. So I do see that. I don't watch it. I just get the clips. But anyway, what we were hearing was it was a pandemic of the unvaccinated. The unvaccinated were filling up the hospitals, and they were killing everybody around, including granny. And also the COVID shots were safe and effective. So from the line of work that I do and Brian does, absolutely none of that added up at all. So we were trying to unravel it and decide what to do. And in the end, I said, Mary, I think I might have called you, Brian, even first.
Right.
I did. I called you and I said, we've got to get another bus. We've got to go out on the road and see for ourselves. I don't care what mainstream says, whether it's says it's safe and effective or not. It's irrelevant to me. We've got to do what we did before and hear from the people on the ground what happened. And so again, the weirdest thing is that Mary said yes, and we have an amazing anonymous funder who helped us get that bus. And we pulled our team together. And this time I thought, I'm going to bring young people on the team, because if I can just save their future baby, that's great. So we brought Claire Dooley and Caroline and Tessa, three young girls.
Claire was pregnant.
That's right.
Claire was pregnant. I found out she was pregnant. I was kind of training Claire up to take over for me. And then she went and got pregnant. So I saw that as a sign. It's keep going, Poles. But anyway, Claire got pregnant on the bus. Anyway, these young girls on the bus, and of course, my Toby came on and did some videography as well. It's really important the young people see what is happening, because they're going to marry somebody. And that person may, I've seen it before, just brainwash them back to another way of thinking. These people have to be solid, standing firm, understanding the dangers. So we alternated in these young people on the tour. What was the question? I can't remember.
So tell us how you got the bus, why you got the bus.
Yeah. So the lovely funder who bought us this bus, and this bus was much bigger than the first bus.
Yeah. Really, it's a beautiful bus.
The beautiful bus with sort of comfy sofas and everything else. And, came, and when the sides went out, which the other bus, the sides didn't come out. If you put the sides out on the other bus, it tipped.
And I have to mention, you had a wonderful driver for part of the tour. It was Sheila Ely's husband who drove the bus, which was he's a very magical guy, but it was a very magical sort of close the circle from the first bus.
I called Sheila and I said, Can Ron drive the bus? And because Sheila was sick with cancer, and she said, you know what? That is just what my husband needs right now. She said, I've got my girls around me. Take him and get him out for a bit. And so we did take Ron, and it was amazing to have someone we trust. It's really important you have a driver that you trust. And he was fun, and he's lived through it with his children, and he was hugging people outside the whole time. We had the perfect team. We loved it. Right. And Brian came on the bus. But when we set out, I thought we're going to get a ton of COVID shot injuries, and maybe I'd heard about remdesivir, so maybe something to do with remdesivir, but on the whole, probably just COVID shot. And the first stop was just 25 COVID shot injuries and deaths. So I thought, right, that's what we're going to get. No. From there on, after that stop, it was the hospital protocol deaths, and they call it murder. Every single person that sat in front of me, bar a few, said my husband was murdered.
When I've been out doing meet and greets with the Salieri Report, and that's what I'm getting. I'm getting stories of a husband or spouse that was murdered.
Awful. Young, right. Some were young as well.
Right. The stories were excruciating, and there were so many of them of hospital protocol deaths, and also specifically the way that when the unvaccinated had to go into the hospital, that they were treated differently, and they were officially given a different standard of care because they were unvaccinated. They were more aggressively treated with things like remdesivir. They were more aggressively treated with ventilators. But it became clear that, you know, because of this aggressive treatment, that really padded the hospital's numbers in terms of showing, oh, the unvaccinated come into the hospital and they die of COVID. Well, no, they died of hospital protocols. And that's exactly what Polly, you know, through these stories was showing.
Wow. So they needed to pad the numbers. And so essentially they're killing people to pad the numbers.
So now when Biden was saying it's the pandemic of the unvaccinated are crowding and being killed, and dying in the hospitals. Yes, Biden, because you killed him. You killed them. That makes total sense now. You killed them.
Right.
The protocols were so draconian, and they were driven also by, you know, Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement. You know, a hospital, and this was uncanny, and Polly, jump in anytime, but, you know, listening to these stories of individuals who either went into the hospital themselves or had a loved one go into the hospital, and they would test them over and over again until they got a positive COVID test. They would come in with an unassociated injury or unassociated illness, but they would test them and they would retest them using faulty PCR tests until they came back positive, because you know what? COVID patients are worth more.
Right. Now, they then kidnap them. We heard many stories of people trying to get their loved ones out of the hospital, and literally they had been kidnapped and you couldn't get them out.
Right. But one of the reasons why you couldn't get them out as well is because the minute that happened, they were given paralytic drugs. So the minute the family members would say, I'm getting lawyers, I'm getting everything, they were given these paralytic drugs that froze these people. They tied them down in 4-point restraints. They starved them and they vented them as quickly as they could so that they could say, look, they're dying now. And then when you look at the medical records, you can see fentanyl, all the other drugs that they basically end of life care. And, you know, we had two 19-year-old girls with Down syndrome killed in there as well. So, and their parents believed that they were targeting the disabled as well. And I can truly believe that. So,
I absolutely believe that. I know during after the bus trip ended, you published, CHD published, Jackie DeVoe's documentary about the same phenomena in the UK. Yeah. And so it wasn't just happening in the United States, it was happening in the UK as well. So you go out on the bus and you're getting a tremendous amount of COVID injection injury and death, but now you're also seeing the unvaccinated targeted and a process of literally, I don't know how we want to describe it, euthanizing or killing healthy people, right?
Yeah. You know, right. How we discovered that it was the unvaxxed that they were targeting was that my first question would always be, did you take the COVID shot? Because it's interesting, isn't it? Who took it? Who didn't? Right. And they were like, no, 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 no. And it became like, there must be someone somewhere. And I called Mary and I said, Mary, they are killing the unvaccinated. In fact, I wanted to call this film Killing the Unvaccinated, but not quite rightly, Mary said no. Because there are other elements of this, not just that. But it was so strong. And Mary was like, Polly, be careful. You've only been out on the road for, you know, X amount of time. And I'm not sure that's really right, because it's such a huge statement to make. But after 8 months of being on the bus, we stopped the bus because we had to get this footage out. We didn't want to keep going on. We knew what this was about. It was so obvious, having done, you know, 1,500 stories of hospital protocol deaths. You have to put it into a documentary and get it out there before. Right.
So I remember you telling me on Financial Rebellion, we're talking before the show, and you said, we're going to end early because we have to get this story out. I mean, I think you felt very compelled to warn people that this is going on. And before you go to the hospital, you have to know how dangerous it is. Right?
Yeah. And medical professionals were telling us, warning us, and you'll see it in the documentary, but then there's a great more that didn't get in, that this is not a safe place. You know, I'd ask them a question, would you put your loved one in a hospital? And they were saying, absolutely not. Not after what they've seen, it is not safe.
Right.
That said, in this day and age that we're in now, I'm sure it's a lot safer, but they're still doing this protocol. So you still have to take someone with you. You should never go into a hospital on your own. But the difference between the COVID era and now is you are allowed to take someone in with you. For now.
And that was how they isolated these individuals. And then all of a sudden, you know, in the case of one of the 19-year-old girls with Down syndrome, the doctor put a do not resuscitate order that the family had never agreed to. And they lost that child. You know, 19 is an adult. Seems like a child to me now. But they would, you know, be able to isolate, they would be able to threaten, be able to manipulate, and then be able to drug their way out of it. And it was just sort of this sequence where, you know, getting putting a patient on remdesivir meant more Medicaid reimbursement or more Medicare reimbursement, putting a patient on a mechanical ventilator, more reimbursement, putting them into ICU, more reimbursement, death, more reimbursement.
Right. I think I just saw a survey that said when the pandemic started, 70%+ of Americans trusted their doctor. And then now it's down to 41%. And, you know, so it seems to have made a dramatic difference as well, not just in trusting the medical establishment, but also trusting vaccines. Is that your experience?
Yeah. I mean, look, it's this been this way for some time. So when Billy got injured, my friend and my friend's friend saw that Billy was fine before, saw that he got injured after a vaccination. They stopped vaccinating. It's the same thing here with COVID. Everyone seems to know someone that's either been hurt or injured by the vaccine or by a hospital protocol. Right. Once you witness that, you're like, I'm not going your way. So people are not stupid. I know we still have a fair amount of people that are still brainwashed. Family members of mine, even to this day. But on the whole, I think that we have got reinforcements massively have arrived for our movement, no doubt.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, I come back to this, you know, in a court of law, eyewitness testimony is important. But this significant amount of eyewitness testimony to me is so unbelievably compelling. And that's why Vax 1, Vax 2 have been so significant. Okay, so we're looking forward to Vax 3 and... I want to point out that Vax 3 has now achieved a level of censorship, which in my experience is unique in the history of documentaries. It's been fact checked before the editors decided what was in it.
Basically, it's been fact-checked, not just by any old fact-checker, but the most experienced science professionals around the world have widely and profoundly debunked the film as misinformation, malinformation, and whatever the other information is.
Right, but they did it before the editors decided what was in the film.
But we still haven't released the film. It's in post-production right now.
So now we've entered a new era of telepathic censorship.
That's right. And the CDC getting their knickers in a twist as well. And every time you put in Vax 3, it goes straight to the CDC. So, and then, you know, we've talked about people's tickets being declined. So we're on the watch list of that for people to see it. And it goes on. People are having their Facebook posts taken down as soon as they say, hey, we're going to go and watch it or even mention it. Down it comes.
Wow.
So they're really, really afraid for this film. And you know what? As they should be.
Right. And the subtitle of the subheading of the title is Authorized to Kill. And, you know, it's very interesting because when the theaters are going to show this on September 18th, they will not use the moniker Vaxxed in it. They will not say Vax 3, but it will say the subtitle Authorized to Kill, which, you
really?
Know, to me, Authorized to Kill is much worse. But Vaxxed has become such a household word that, you know, it's verboten. It is, you know, it's like a swear word. It should be, you know, start out with asterisks, and the movies will not show it on their marquees.
So the marquee will say Authorized to Kill.
Yeah, yes. You will not see Vax 3 anywhere on any of those AMC theaters.
How divinely wonderful is that? Because that really expresses what you're dealing with here. I agree with you. That's much better. I just think that, you know, there's a divine enigma here. Okay, so the marquees are going to say Authorized to Kill. How do we get tickets? How do we make sure we're at the premiere for Vax 3?
Right, well, if you're living in America, then you need to go to vax3.org and look for your local screening. Go to that and then see where your local theater is. Now, some of them have sold out. And if that's the case, contact isabella.yon, Y-O-N, at childrenshealthdefense.org. And she will do her very best to find you a theater near you. But we do have a big, big announcement. In fact, it's going to be on Financial Rebellion because the 18th is a Wednesday. And so the next day in the morning, we will be having a big Children's Health Defense announcement. It happens to be Financial Rebellion.
So
what better place to do our big announcement? So we have a lot of emails coming in from around the world saying, how can we see it? You will be able to see it, but wait till the day after the theater events. Oh, you know what we should talk about for a second if we've got time, Catherine?
Okay.
Brian, while Vax 2 was going on, Brian and I and Dr. Suzanne Humphreys went to Australia and
that's
New Zealand.
Correct, in 2017.
They wouldn't let you in, I thought.
No, they let us in, but they were furious because we didn't tell. This is what we did. We were on Periscope and we said, we're not going to tell you where we're going because if we tell you where we're going, then they're not going to let us in, which would have happened. So we never told anyone we were going to Australia. And we sort of, I think people thought we were going to England. Anyway, we go to Australia. We get in super easy. And then because they were not on alert, we land and go live and say, thank you, Australia, for letting us in. Well, this drove the pit. They went absolutely bananas. So we started traveling around and the press was so awful. The theaters were full of, do you remember Horrible Hank and all those awful journalists?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
And
yes.
Trolls and you name it. Anyway, we got through it and Brian had to leave a little bit earlier. And so Brian left a bit early and off he went. So then and Dr. Suzanne and Anu, who was traveling with us. And by the way, and I don't know if you know Anu, but he used to get stopped everywhere we went in, which was kind of a sort of slight, I thought it was a bit racist, really. But he would always get pulled to one side. But on this occasion, coming out of Australia, Suzanne was a little ahead of me. And I hear her in the security thing, but arguing away with the security people. And I shouted, Dr. Suzanne, are you okay? And the police officer, or whatever you call these people, was like, you cannot speak to her. I thought, oh gosh, Suzanne's been pulled aside. Through I go with a big red cross comes up. Anu walks straight on out. So he's the first country he's allowed to get out of. big red cross, and I get detained and taken off. They take away our phones. I suppose I knew Catherine, so I would never have let them do that. They take away everything, and they tell us both that we are now not allowed back into the country for 3 years. Anyway, to kind of go back to another a bit further on, an amazing organization, Meryl Dory's organization in Australia, decided to fight the fact that we were thrown out of Australia. And when they got the emails, they demanded the emails coming from the health secretary. In the emails, it says, "Why didn't you get Brian Hooker? How did he escape?" And then they were like, they couldn't really get me because I didn't really do anything wrong. But so they were like, put her down as a danger to the good order of Australia. So that's what I was got on. Suzanne was got on something else. And they were furious that they didn't get Brian Hooker. But I don't think for a second we will be ever allowed into Australia, Brian.
Brian, you slipped the noose. You slipped the noose.
Right. I've never evaded the law in without even knowing it. In such clandestine fashion. But really, wherever we went, we were embraced by the public, by individuals that have been following us. And, you know, through Meryl Dory's organization, Australian Vaccination Network. But yet the authorities absolutely hated us. We were condemned by one of the governors, I believe they call them premiers, of one of the states of Australia by name, you know, and you know, just touring around the country in, you know, a little rented van. It was quite incredible, you know, the level of censorship, the level of hostility from the authorities, and you know, and the level of censorship now that we are experiencing with Vax 3, you know, seems really reminiscent that you can fact check something that doesn't exist.
And right. Matt Hancock, you know, remember Matt Hancock, the health secretary? He actually said publicly, the makers of Vax 2 are diabolical, dangerous individuals. And that's my Toby and Brian Burrows. But I was just like, it's just awful the way that they, and you know what, Catherine, at this point, I think for viewers listening, every one of us that has spoken out about our children's condition, doesn't matter who it is, or warn people about the COVID shots, it's called massive divide within families and with friendships. So right. I just want your listeners to know that we know it's called massive divide. But you know what? What you have to do is love on them, but come to our community. Because when you're on the chat of either Solari or CHDTV, you will find your people. They right. are there, and you just got a whole new right. family that's coming away. But it is right. hard. It's hard to be trolled.
Well, it's hard to be trolled. But the other thing is, it's remarkable how powerful the lies are. So mm-hmm. I just have to tell you a story. I think Polly's heard it, but I don't think you've heard it, Brian. Mm-hmm. For when we were, they had to get the honest people out of the government during the Clinton administration because they wanted to basically engineer a financial coup, and we were in the way. We kept stopping the fraud, and so they had to get the, you know, the clean guys out, and so we were targeted and accused of all these just unbelievable false accusations. And there was one week when we were getting a ton of accusations that we were laundering money. And my firm, I had a great chief financial officer. We had a very successful firm. But many of the employees were shareholders, so the financials were available to everybody monthly. And, you know, there was no secrecy around the money. And all the checks were signed by two people, one of which was the chief financial officer. And so one morning he comes to see me and he says, "Can I talk to you?" In fact, his name was also Brian. And he said, we went into the boardroom and he said, "You know, I just have to confess this. I woke up this morning and I said to myself, well, maybe she is laundering money." And then I realized, wait a minute, she can't launder the money unless I do it. And I know I'm not doing it. So why would I think that you might be laundering money since I know I'm not doing it? But here he is, and he controls the checkbook. And he's beginning to contemplate whether or not I'm laundering money or not, just because the media is making stuff up.
Right.
It was remarkable. So when you get trolled like that, you have to, you know, you have to have this amazing spiritual inner confidence that you are, you know, that you are over the target and you are doing what you're doing. And this is just the way it works. It's just the way it is.
I could have said it better. You know, there's a plaque on the CHD bus that says pray big, and they do, right. And we do, because you know, if this wasn't ordained by God, then we would be in a world of hurt. And you talk about, you know, the targeting, even with the CDC whistleblower story, you know, the trolls came after me because they said that I violated, you know, two-party consent for recording some of my phone calls with a CDC whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson. You know, of course, it was absolutely not true. I traveled to Oregon, which was a one-party consent state. But, you know, that became the story for them was, oh, you know, rogue university scientist breaks wiretapping laws.
But we've had our children attacked as well, Brian, haven't we? I've had billions. Right.
We've had our kids attacked, you know, because we had the audacity and we really worked. My son's a non-speaker. He doesn't speak, but we really worked hard with him to be able to gain his permission to, because he knew he was being filmed for the movie Vaxxed. And he's a speller now, but he was not then. But, you know, to this day, he's like, if I could help children, and I could help people avoid what I've been through, I will do it. But yet again, you know, anything that they could attack, you know, my son was featured with a baby bottle. You know, all of a sudden, you know, why are you giving a 16-year-old a baby bottle? That's the only way we could get his medicine in him.
Right. So yeah. I do want to bring up, I'm looking forward to a lot of fun with you both this fall. The movie comes out on September 18th. I think it's really going to go, and it's really going to go. It's very powerful, and I've only seen the current edit, but it's going to be very powerful. And one of the reasons it's so powerful and important is it documents beyond any shadow of a doubt, you know, there will be a victory in the court of popular opinion that the medical system and the government have conspired to murder people. And this is a crime. They have given authority to kill, so authorized to kill is a very appropriate title. And we are talking about a mass atrocity, a crime against humanity, whether it's killing people who took the injection or killing people who got into the hospital and were targeted with these protocols. And they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And so, but this has ramifications well beyond the healthcare system, because it has ramifications for the whole governance system and financial system. It questions the entire credibility of the system, appropriately so. But obviously, there are many people in the system who will act to defend the system. And I think part of viewing this documentary, embracing it, I always say the pathway to true solutions, you have to go through the doorway of grief of facing, you know, what is. I used to have a pastor who would always say, if we can face it, God can fix it. Polly's heard me say that maybe 1,000 times, but we can fix it. There are real solutions here, particularly if we all know not to let ourselves get poisoned. So it's amazing. Mothers of unvaxxed children tell me that they really have problems with their kids now in daycare centers or kindergartens because the vaccinated kids don't have enough energy to play with their kids. Their kids have way too much energy for the unvaccinated. No, it's a real problem of, you know, for them, and they have to seek out unvaccinated children as playmates. But so there's a doorway of grief we have to help everybody walk through with Vax 3 and come out the other side. And step one is, of course, making sure you and your family are not poisoned. And I keep using the word poisoning because poison is so simple. Everybody understands it. And this is really what's happening. Somebody's poisoning us. It's intentional. It's dangerous. We have to take charge of our health and our lives, and we need to stop it from happening whenever we can stop it. And I think Vax 3 can help people get through to the really, you know, the simple 411 of facing this and getting back to building your life around people and systems you can trust.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know what?
Oh, go ahead, Polly. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and going forward, supporting the science, because, you know, the next question is how serious is this shedding? And Brian Hooker's team are working on that, thank God, because we really, in these self-spreading vaccines and all these stuff that they were just so dark, and we really need to educate ourselves. So my eyes are on the science department of Children's Health Defense and, and the shedding.
And we want to make sure that people get educated because, you know, all too well, Catherine, that they're trying to pull this again. You know, they're throwing, you know, avian flu against the wall, monkeypox. Okay. Let's throw in a little Marburg and see what sticks. And so, you know, so they can queue up the next pandemic because they're filling this, you know, $150 billion void of all the vaccines that were sold, you know, by Moderna and Pfizer. You know, now that people have grown wise of that, they're not getting boosted, then the demand for the vaccine has gone down. But Pfizer and Moderna and you know, their counterparts and the other big pharma are addicted to these big profits. And so, yes, they are looking
at... Well, we still see groups that are requiring you to get a COVID shot.
Correct.
I mean, there's a Rasmussen survey saying one out of four people know somebody was killed by a COVID shot. And yet we have organizations which are still mandating and requiring a COVID shot. It's unbelievable to me. And well, people who are still recommending it.
You have Mandy Cohen, the head of the CDC, saying 6 months and up and pregnant women, get your COVID shot and get your flu shot.
Get
That's
flu
the head
shot,
of the
right.
CDC.
So we right, and I hate to say that, given what we know, that's a depopulation. In my mind, that's a depopulation program.
You know,
that is what that is.
It's really difficult to go out on that limb, but the more that you look at it and the more that, you know, that message is congruent with, you know, like the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, and then you see it happening in real time, you know, it's time to you know, really go after that and call a spade a spade.
Well, it's really funny. I you don't know this story, Brian, but Dr. Skidmore and I worked for many years on the money that was disappearing from the federal government.
Right.
And he kept saying, why do you not give up on this story? And I said, Mark, if we don't fix this, there's only one way they can balance the budget, and that's by lowering life expectancy. And they will do it. And I told him that in 2017, 18, 19, 20. And then I said, okay, you know, they're going to do it. And interestingly enough, $20 trillion of the money that's missing is missing from the Department of Defense, which ran Operation Warp Speed. And I don't think that's an accident. So Children's Health Defense doesn't have to go out on that limb, but Saleri is very happy to go out on that limb because I've been saying this, you know, I've been saying the only way they can balance the budget at this point, I've been saying this since 2000. So I hate to say it, it's an actuarial, you know, it's an actuarial equation. Okay. So, I do want to say one thing. The reason that Vax3 was possible was we had a big donor who supported the bus. And there have been many donors who supported Children's Health Defense who've made all these great projects possible. And I have to say, I think it's a great investment. I think it was a great investment to fund that bus. I think it was a great investment to fund the scientific research that Brian and his colleagues are doing. And so I do want to make a pitch for funding this, because I feel like, you know, when you read the Bible, you read about the walls, you know, you can't let the walls be breached. You know, the town is protected by the walls. And I feel like Children's Health Defense keeps putting up the wall and they break through the wall and then you rebuild the wall and they break through the wall. And, you know, when thousands of people sign the bus, you build the wall back up, and we need those walls. And we absolutely need science. And this is the only way we're going to get good science is by funding it. So I want to make a pit. One, I want to thank the donors who've made this possible, because I think Vax3 is going to be an incredible contribution. You know, but every dollar counts. So sign up for those tickets. How do we sign up for the tickets again, Polly?
Go to Vax3.org, and everything is on there. Even who to contact if you're having trouble. And if you can't go to see us in the theatre, don't worry. Remember, tune in to Financial Rebellion on the 19th, and we will be making a big announcement.
We'll let you know. Okay.
Very exciting.
Well, congratulations on this. This is going to be great. Any last words, Brian or Polly, that you want to add before we close?
Well, really, you know, this is science. You know, people will say, well, this is just a, you know, it's a collection of stories. Well, you have such a huge collection of stories that this, you know, it transcends just, you know, personal experience or one in a million anecdote or whatever. You know, you pile story upon story and you, right. and you literally hear the same thing over and over again. And so what the bus did is it filled the void of science. It dared do the science that the authorities would never do and they would certainly never want you to see.
Right. Facts matter. And these are thousands and thousands of facts.
Right.
I just want to say to your listeners, we are still taking stories. We're not going to stop doing stories on CHDTV. So again, if you have been affected, especially if you're living abroad, I want to hear about what's going on in your country. Did you have the same thing going on? Then contact isabella.yon at childrenshealthdefence.org and I will do your story. I'll bring you on Good Morning CHD because we've got to keep doing them. So bus or no bus, we're still going to do the stories. And I want to thank you, Catherine, for just being such an immense support to us. We love Soleri. And everything you do. And I know our viewers just, you know, Financial Rebellion is our top show right now.
Really?
You're right at the top.
So one of my favorite poems is from Robert Penn Warren. And it reminds me so much of what you both are doing with the bus. It says, tell me a story in this century and moment of madness. Tell me a story.
Right. Everyone has a story.
Everybody has a story and every story counts. So CHDTV and Brian Hooker, Chief Scientist Officer of Children's Health Defense. Thank you for joining us on the Soleri Report, and we will see you at the premiere on September 18th. We cannot wait. Vax 3, ladies and gentlemen, Authorized to Kill. It's coming. You don't want to miss it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.